particles. He's tended to be somewhat cynical about them, except that, you know, there are college labs that do entanglement as a site experiment. You could do it in a college. So they really exist. Matter of fact, a couple guys picked up some Nobel Prize a couple of weeks ago on the basis of their understanding of entanglement. So I miss those days. I miss John. I miss Vic. I miss our physics conversation. But that's the nature of the world.
Yeah, he may become boring to some of the listeners. I want to make some comment. The size of an electric is zero. Spirit. A quantum field theory describes particles that are point-like. All experimental evidence confirms that this up to the highest collider energy, or an order of magnitude of 1 teravolt, corresponding to the distance of 10 to 17 centimeters. We could talk about it, and we can ask if somebody else has a question or comment. Back to you.
Well, let's hold off until later. Hopefully Howard is still here with his question, and I'll just, as a closing point for the time being, the problem I always have is the Bohr atom. You could Google it, you can look at it, and if you really believe in it, because it's not real, then you can imply that there are just very small orbital mechanics going on. There are actual mechanical orbits and spins and angular momentum, and electrons have diameters like planets, and the nucleus is like a sun. It's not. It's a way of trying to wrap your head around it, but it fills you with so many incorrect beliefs that I don't really like it as a model. But it's you know, everyone who's gone through high school knows the Bohr atom.
Well, it violates Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Am I right?
Well, I mean, not necessarily, because you're not showing momentum. The Heisenberg uncertainty principle is that you could measure either position or momentum, but not both. So the Bohr atom just kind of shows electrons as physical things spinning around with a non-zero diameter. Not necessarily does it violate the uncertainty, because it doesn't mention what its momentum is.
Plenty of talking about it. I see it as an evolution. So, what was it, 1915? When he proposed the model of an atom, which was the modification of Rutherford's model, that was thick. Actually, it was called Rutherford-Bohr model. Bohr model of an atom is based on quantum mechanics. This one wasn't. And the difference between these early models was that the Rydberg formula for the special emission lines of atomic hydrogen. Anyhow, if there is nobody who wants to talk about something else, then we can talk about it. Intuition.
Okay, Wes, I think we should go to Howard, and we can always come back to this topic tonight or another night if things get busy. How's that?
Absolutely, four.
Okay, very good. So, once again, this is AC2GS Roy. Howard, W2HL, are you still with us tonight? Oh, well, I guess Howard has to step away. Perhaps he will come back later. Anyone else out there with any questions, preferably amateur radio-related questions for tonight? If so, give me your first name and your call sign.
And I hope you are too, and everybody out here. I just thought I'd drop by and see what's going on. A week ago, my phone device for people that bought it. It was a pretty interesting discussion. Starlink Coleman device has a phased array as an antenna on it to track the satellite. So we had a really nice talk about that. Back to you, Roy.
That sounds very interesting. I have a tape. I've fallen behind in listening, but I take the work. Into a business that probably is always kind of 1 week away from bankruptcy or something. It doesn't strike me as a particularly successful field. Satellites sound great, but sometimes I don't think they make the profit that people thought. Of course, there was the satellite telephone system that crashed first, not literally, but figuratively.
Now, I used to have XM radio from satellite, and it worked really, really well. And then there was another one, the second one, merged together. Internet kind of came and caught them, by surprise, so the music was down to over the satellite. But I really enjoyed it. It did a good job. I really did enjoy XM radio quite a bit.
Yes. Well, yeah, I had one too. Memory serves me. It kind of got a little waffly when it was raining heavy, but aside from that, it worked reasonably good. They tried every method imaginable. They tried to sell people internet subscriptions so that you didn't have to go through the radio. You just bought a subscription and logged on to a website and listened to the audio feed. But yeah, I think internet just kind of killed them. I don't know what their profit margin is, but they don't really make the news that much lately. It's a shame, but just because you can do something doesn't necessarily mean it's profitable. Something Elon Musk apparently is learning these days. But I had a subscription as well. I think a lot of us had a subscription to one of the two satellite radio broadcasters.
PhD.
Yes, Jim.
Good evening, Roy, and other gentlemen. I had a very good week roving around the Black Hills and the Badlands of South Dakota this past week, and my satellite radio was an absolute joy to be in the middle of nowhere, and it worked perfectly. So while you're in a place where it's all wired, it really doesn't make a difference. There's lots of ways to get signal, but to have to be really in the middle of nowhere and to be able to get your signal through is a beautiful thing. It really works. So it may not be the best business model, but it certainly is a great tech model.
I agree with you, Jim. It's a great technology, and it does work. But you know, part of my mind, unfortunately, I don't know, I'm not really a business guy. The problem is the people who really need it are you in South Dakota and all the other people in very low population areas where the infrastructure isn't built up enough. The problem is that that's a very small percentage of the population. So if it was an inexpensive technology where it would cost you next to nothing to set up, then okay, if you only get 1% of the population of the United States going into it, then if it doesn't cost you much, you're still making money. That's not the case with satellites. They lost a bundle. It's going to be the same way with Starlink. You know, it's very good in Ukraine because they're in the middle of a damn war. When the war's over, they're just going to connect fibers all over the place and they'll get better service. So, again, in cases of emergency, yes. In cases of outlying populations, small population groups, wonderful. To turn a profit, to pay off the stockholders, so lots of luck.
It certainly is a challenging business model, no doubt. Thank you, KD2VA.
You're welcome, Jim. Jeff?
Well, yeah, it's a challenging business model for satellite radio. Starlink, I know people that have it, and they've been very happy with it, but as more and more users get carrier, they start loading down the satellites. For what they're going to do about that, but as far as being in the middle of Africa, you need to, like I'm looking at having a class driving around the U.S. and Starlink would work perfectly for them because they have a mobile version of it. Sometimes when you're driving, but when you stop, campground with wherever you're at, you can get internet access right there. Yeah, just good, you know, good areas, good models for it. Back to you, Roy. Maybe you
question.
Yes, Leslie?
A gentleman used the term bandwidth drops. I have a problem with that. Maybe more explanation.
So, Wesley, you want Jeff to explain the concept of bandwidth drops?
Okay. No response. So, we have a set of bandwidth. Never changes. So what then affects the signal, the tourist?
I'm not quite sure where you got that from. So maybe I missed something. Maybe I blinked. Did Jeff say there's a bandwidth drop?
Yes.
Okay, let me ask you, Jeff. Did you mention something about a bandwidth drop?
Yeah, and as you get more users packed nearer together and using the same satellite up there, there's only so much bandwidth available for everybody, and you know, it will slow down for users. It's supposed to get up to 100 gig rate, so when you put a bunch of people in their area, there's only so much bandwidth available to be shared in back.
Oh, okay. So Wesley, he's not saying that the signal drops. He's saying that any bandwidth is only capable of transmitting a maximum amount of data. And if you go beyond that, the engineers have to put constraints on your bandwidth of signal. How many bits you're getting in order to not overdo the system, which has a finite amount of bandwidth and the data rate. So it's more of a constraint to the data rate based on the available bandwidth of these devices.
Exactly. Here I have a problem with both of your comments. Traditional satellite internet speed top of 100 megabits per second. Starlink internet download speed reach 250 megabits, which is three times as fast as traditional internet because it is thousands of those satellites orbit at much lower altitude, increasing communication speed. So that I would like to understand.
Well, I wish I had Elon here to answer some of his questions, but because the you know, it's not a direct satellite to base station connection. It's backing off a series of satellites, and they're all taking up bandwidth. So although you're getting a certain number of bits per second, it's not simply going through one satellite. It's going through a chain of satellites to the closest or most efficient base station. So these things add up, and certainly good old Elon thinks, agrees with the concept, because he's always talking about needing to launch a lot more Starlinks into the air in order to extend the area's coverage and to make sure that the people don't get throttled. And so they are going to get throttled, because there's only so many satellites that you can put in low orbit without really annoying the heck out of astronomers. He even made a comment about a year or two ago that if he isn't able to get SpaceX to launch enough Starlink satellites, he might have to declare bankruptcy. So it seems to be a very serious issue with him, as well it should, because most people don't care where the signal comes from as long as it's consistent and the bit rate stays as high as they need it to be. If you have downages or throttle, that kills your business model. People kind of discovered that with the cable industry. Cable offers a very high initial speed, but because the connections tend to be branching out from a single central point, the more other people are using the service, the less speed you have, and it can fall to a slow speed, which causes people to not be able to hear
up to the Seattle CSRD. and it all works very well. So if I use Starlink when I'm out in my RV, camped out somewhere in the middle of there, I'll be able to have the same kind of access that I have right now in my house. So
there are numerous gas-fired power plants under construction in Poland. But if our gas plant power not solar, probably not in line with what's going on. Is that question related to solar power?
No, nuclear. Westinghouse builds a lot of nuclear power plants. They've been involved with it for decades. And apparently Poland has contracted them to do it. They were looking at different countries that would do it, and sure enough, of course, they picked the United States to do it. They feel we have the better ones, the more safe ones, you know. So that's what it relates to. There was an article, about 3 or 4 weeks ago. So I brought it up on the net last week. Back to you, Wes.
That one, I know that it's going to be 6 gigawatts to 9 gigawatts in the capacity. I didn't know that it started and they built it. That's a new
situation. No, the contracts are just given out. So, no, that's probably who knows how long before they even break ground. It's probably into 2030 or so, or you know, maybe even longer, you know, the way these jobs go, before they actually can draw a megawatt out of the thing. The contracts were just given out now. They said it's going to be located in the northern part of the whole country, one of what's up there, near a lake or something. They were stopped decades ago here. people were all afraid of it. So, yeah, I think it's a good way to go, and I'm glad they're going to do it there. The article I read was that it seemed like it was the first nuclear power plants that they were going to put into Poland. That's what I read. And I don't think there were any other ones that they mentioned. They just mentioned Westinghouse is going to build those three.
Carbon imprint, so global warming and such is not a problem. Dealing with the waste products of a nuclear reactor is a completely different problem, but not exactly related to climate change. So if you're primarily interested in diminishing your carbon footprint, then a nuclear generator is the way to go.
QSL. Well, I had never been to Poland, so I would have no idea about it. And I've been to some other places that are near Poland, and the way they keep the roads and the way things are done, and, you know, all very interesting. And I'm sure they probably have a lot of things to teach us, like we have a lot of things to teach them.
The story is that Poland accepted the rules of European Union looking at United States of America and trying to get the best from them. So I would say United States is about 20 years behind Polish infrastructure. 20 years. I mean, the quality came from, I mean, Germany is next to Poland. And German quality is something, or Swiss quality is something that the world admires. And Polish were heading not really for the quality, but they had no choice. Scrutiny for every dollar given from that $233 billion with no return, no need to return, from European Union was such a great that and the punishment for just $5 wasted, $10 wasted, was such a great that they decided that they had no choice. They have to use every year the total amount of money that was given to Poland, or else. Let me drop. In other words, the internal control made all of this progress. Somebody complained about police officer being so much up to the rules in New York. You should talk to the Polish police. They are twice as much. It's like they were memorizing every word in the codex of the police officer they're supposed to know. No discussion. Doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, what is your position. Nobody cares. So that's the power of Poland. Interesting.
Well, I wouldn't speculate about any country that I've not been to, you know, to actually see what's going on over there. So I wouldn't be able to say at all. And, you know, what is more advanced? Well, you know, certain social systems are more advanced than others. Great, you know, great. And maybe they know more about it than we do, but how to say, you know, not to complain and not to blame and, you know, make the best of things, even here in the United States.
No, it is not that they are trying to be good. No, they are not trying to be good. They are normal people like Americans, normal people. The scrutiny is three times bigger. So you have a green light and people are supposed to cross the street. They're trying to be as fast walking so they don't walk when the green light ended, because they're going to be getting ticket. It's not that like in here somebody crossing the street is untouchable. Doesn't matter, it's a red light, green light. It's always fault of the driver. Now over here it's equal. It's like it's not very much comfortable for the American who comes to Poland, because he feels scrutiny for the first time when he lands in the airport, and nobody cares that he's American or whoever he is. Nobody cares if the president of Poland is trying to cross the street. Everybody, there is the group of police cars escorting some diplomats. They have to obey to the same rules, and the regular police officer can stop them. It's that rigorous. Enter again.
Well, Leslie, I've never been to Poland, so I can't say one way or the other. You know, I wouldn't speculate. I have been to Czech Republic, and it's very similar, I think, as you describe it. Czech Republic is quite advanced, or at least it was when I went there. So I don't know what else there is to say.
Yeah, they are more. They have more freedom in Czech Republic. It's like you're less restricted with whatever you're doing, where you're working, and what you're saying. And it's a freedom of speech, but it's not written into the Constitution. Not like United States. So before you explain yourself in the precinct, it may take a few days. Enter XJ.
You know, how to say, I don't really know, you know, specifically about these things. The only way I would know is actually going there and having some kind of experience, you know. And how to say, you know, like I said before, we got something we can learn from them, they have something they can learn from us, you know. And it's not your colleague's fault to take responsibility for your own mistakes, especially for a wave.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Wright.
Okay, interesting discussion. I tell you, the Polish consulate should write you a little check for the advertisement. Eastern Europe has evolved over the last 30 years in interesting ways. I remember a complete moron historian who wrote a book that said the end of history. He thought that with the end of the Soviet Union, nothing special was going to happen in the world ever again. Wasn't he incredibly wrong? Right now, aside from obviously the turmoil that is Ukraine and Russia, little concerns about Hungary personally. I don't particularly care for the direction politics seems to go in there.
KD2VHD.
Yes, Jim. Yes, Jim.
Thank you. Poland is a remarkable place when you consider for at least the last 100 years, as they have been crushed, kiboshed, invaded, run over, and the fact that they even exist is remarkable. But the fact that they are becoming one of the most amazing countries on the planet just defies all belief. I'm most impressed by that that country. I haven't visited, but I hope to.
Well, Wesley can probably tell you much better than I can, but Poland has had that problem for many, many, many centuries. There's a big portion of the land that previously was known as Galicia, and you know, one day it was owned by Poland, the next day Austria, the next day Russia. A lot of Jewish people emigrated from Galicia. And my own father, he was born in the United States, but his parents were born there. And for many years, he would talk kind of broken Russian, thinking that it was Polish, simply because his parents considered it the native language of Galicia and Poland. So Poland has been screwed over for many, many, many centuries. A lot of countries, unfortunately, tended to have been screwed for many, many centuries. It's what people tend to do with other people.
I disagree, Roy. I think that people can be nice to each other. People can give credit when credit is due. People can take responsibility for things that they do. And this, I believe, is so.
Yes and no. We didn't have the oldest democracy in the world. Maybe not the oldest, Dr. Roy would protest, but the best system in the world, United States of America. And it's not that Polish are better or worse or... No, they can't have the same freedom as the United States. They have to grow up with the new generation to value all of that what America achieved. So the government decided to go to make a shortcut. They simply applied rules and scrutiny for the rules from the country that was quite corrupted. It's not quite corrupted. The quite corrupted is Russia right now, and everything that where and what Russia touched made corrupted. They went to the point that you cannot even dream to talk to. I was born there. I was living there. I was giving bribes. I was paying bribes. Try to say even the words. And as I said, before you explain yourself what you meant, you may spend a week in the police precinct. Enter Exia. Victoria.
To think that I doubled with you, Wesley, I was remarking upon the various aspects of humanity, what good, bad, and indifferent human beings can be. We're all those things. It depends upon circumstances and stresses. You know, if you want to see civilization stop working, starve a group of people for a couple of days. They'll bring out the bats and the guns and all kind of nasty things. So you can be frightened into acting like savages. Unfortunately, be thankful that we don't quite live in those times, at least for now.
So we may say United States of America was my dream. And that was where I wanted to be, and who I wanted to be. I remember the time when I went to the Statue of Liberty waving with my passport of the citizen of United States. I was so happy. Polish cannot have it yet. They have three times more strict rules to follow before they would grow up to the point of really having those rules are something that is a part of freedom instead of part of restriction. I don't know if I describe that properly. Maybe Dr. Roy can reword it for me.
I think you explained it well, Wesley. We don't all kind of start at the same point. Some countries are more cautious with giving their population too much freedom. They're concerned that, like a drug, it might cause a bad effect. And, you know, you can find historical evidence for people starting off that way and it working out. Taiwan is a perfect example. When the Kuomintang overrode Taiwan when they were thrown out of mainland China by the communist Chinese, it was a very totalitarian state, but as time progressed, it became a very open society. Taiwan is one of the great free states of the world. So there's nothing to say that they can't follow a similar route to Poland. I hope they do. They could go in either direction. Any of the Eastern European countries can go in either direction. Russia obviously went in the other direction. Individual freedom is difficult to maintain. It's worth it, but sometimes people just will trade their freedom for a false sense of security. And that's another sad aspect of humanity.
Okay. If you don't mind, we have like 10 minutes before the space report. So maybe those minutes we could talk about the science section. We stopped at when you said, no, I don't believe that the Heisenberg uncertainty principle was violated with Bohr model. If you want me to talk about it.
Yeah, sure. I'm just making a point that the Heisenberg uncertainty principle is that a particle's position in space and momentum cannot be simultaneously be measured. Now, that really has nothing to do with a static model that the Bohr atom is. But, okay, you could ask it.
Let me take some position in it. I'm talking about radius and orbit. Okay, so it violates Heisenberg uncertainty principle because it considers electrons to have both known radius and orbit. Bohr model provides an incorrect value for the ground state orbital angular momentum, and it makes poor prediction regarding the spectra of larger atoms. What else? Does not predict the relative intensities of spectral lines. Does not explain structure of and hyperfine structure in spectral lines, and does not explain Zeeman effect. And if we go to Zeeman effect, that would be the effect of splitting of spectral line into several components in presence of static magnetic field. And mainly, we go before that to the Dutch Peter Zeeman. What was 1890 something when he got the Nobel Prize, let me drop. There was Paschenbeck effect in splitting of atomic energy levels in presence of strong magnetic field. That occurs when the external magnetic field is sufficiently low to disrupt the coupling between orbitals and spin and angular momentum. So that's what we started with, but the more I talk, we're actually losing that the argument that I was supporting violation of Heisenberg as a principle by Bohr model. Back to you.
Again, I don't see why that's a violation of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. It's a violation of Schrodinger's wave equation and a whole bunch of other things. But where in the Bohr atom is there a picture of a momentum? And if you look exactly at what the Heisenberg uncertainty principle is, once again, it says that no particle can have its position in space and momentum measured simultaneously. I guess you can infer an orbit, but it's not inherent in the Bohr atom. So, again, I would not really say that it is a strictly, the big problem is that it's a violation of the uncertainty principle. It's a violation of a whole bunch of other things and the experimental method that, as I mentioned, although you can find a listing for what the diameter of an electron is, but if you read very closely, it does not tell you its measurement. It tells you that its measurement is less than the minimum measurement capable of the experiment at the time. So not quite sure whether it really significantly violates uncertainty principle. It violates a whole bunch of others, and it's easier for people to think of it that way. If you start to tell people that there are things that have no dimension, they get headaches. Protons and neutrons have dimensions. They have a diameter. They have a diameter because they're not fundamental particles. The fundamental particles that make up the protons and neutrons are three quarks. And the three quarks have no dimensions. But if you put three dimensionless points together in a little ball, you get three dimensions.
Heisenberg principle applies only to dual nature microscopic particles and not to macroscopic particles which wave nature is very small. But says that it's impossible to determine both the position and velocity of electrons simultaneously. And Bohr decided that he wants to add the radius and the orbit. So if there is an orbit, doesn't matter what the orbit is, KNLM, starting from the enclosed, right? Then that orbit is where the two first electrons are supposed to be, 2, 4, 8, 18, and 32. That would be correct in each one of the orbit. Let me know. So just the assumption of the radius and the orbit. The orbit gives you the position. Doesn't matter what is the orbit. It gives you the position. That's where supposed to the two first electrons be. That's a violation of Heisenberg principle because you cannot determine the position. And to actually.
Again, I would not pick that hill to die on. You have to kind of stretch definitions and such. You could stick a big ball and say that's the nucleus. You could stick a small ball and say that's an electron, and just put it somewhere away from the nucleus without particularly inferring that it is orbiting around in a precise momentum, and kind of leave it fuzzy. Again, there's a lot of other much, much bigger problems. If that was really how electrons and nuclei work, eventually the electron would spin down into the nucleus and, you know, just kind of implode, which obviously it never does. So, and if you solve Schrodinger's equation, you find out that orbitals are not really circular orbits. That's why, unfortunately, they call them orbitals instead of orbits. And spins, unfortunately, are not mechanical rotational spins. And a lot of things that, unfortunately, we use for terms in physics tend to be more confusing than not. So there's a lot of better reasons to say that the Bohr atom sinks. I've always thought the Bohr atom sinks. It confused more people than it helped educate. And going back to the beginning of this particular story, you know, people, very smart guys like Dick, kind of in their head thought that it was orbital mechanics done very, very small, which is nothing that quantum mechanics is at all about. Anyone sit down and look up what a P, D, or F or electron orbital looks like, and it will give you a very, very slight migraine.
You talking about the Bohr-Sommerfeld model. So historically, the refinement of Bohr model was the Sommerfeld model. The Bohr-Sommerfeld model. In this model, electrons travel in elliptical orbits around the nucleus rather than in circular orbit. The Sommerfeld model was better than explaining atomic spectral effects. That were like a Stark effect in the spectral line speeding. However, the model couldn't accommodate the magnetic quantum number. So ultimately, the Bohr model and the model is based upon in replace. There was the Pauli principle, the Wolfgang Pauli model based on the quantum mechanics in 1925 that improved to produce the modern model introduced by Schrodinger in, what is it? It was a year later. It was 1925, this was 1926. So today the behavior of the hydrogen atom is explained using the mechanics to describe atomic orbital centric shift.
Yes, I agree with you. But again, if you show anyone the Bohr model from, I don't know, I don't hang out with too many teenagers, so 20 on up, they'll recognize it. Most likely they will have been shown that in high school as a preliminary explanation of how atoms work, unfortunately. They're not going to show them SPDF orbitals. They're not going to explain that spins are polarization rotations of electromagnetic fields, because if they do, they'll run from the class and never come back.
That is evolution. Start with ether theory, which is completely false, a complete nonsense. The really unpleasant nonsense started from 1833, 1837, and still some people till today talk about ether. So if we take the Bohr model, at its time, it was good. It was something. It was achievement. It was really something scientists were talking about. And it was easy to understand. I'm not sure what is today a line of explanation for the quantum mechanics in terms of atomic structure that would be easy for the students to absorb. Maybe you know, Dr. Ray.
sorry. You're teaching those kids these days, but I'm willing to bet you it is closer to the Bohr model than it is